Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 3 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 Stephen King-adapted film, The Shawshank Redemption, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Lewitt of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Welcome back, Jake.
Thank you, Rob. I have just cancelled my plans to Reno to be on this show today.
Your wife is happy about that fact.
Well, I mean, I had plans to go, but it turns out it's better to go to hell than Reno, so I decided not to go to either.
Okay.
I haven't been.
That's fair. So, minute 3 begins with Andy continuing to drink and ends with a couple starting to undress. So we ended things yesterday with lots of music, a gun wrapped in some sort of hand towel or something like that, with a whole bunch of bullets that somehow ended up staying and not falling on the ground. So that's good too. I actually did a little research since yesterday to figure out what type of gun it is, because we were talking about that.
Okay. Sure.
And so it's very easy to do these things just by going to Internet Movie Firearms.
Firearms database. Yep.
Where they give you the information that you really want. You know, it's a good place to get information about guns in any movie, if you are interested in that type of thing, in finding the information. Andy actually has what's known as a cult detective special.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, they say here that you can tell that it's a first generation version of this gun based on the grip design and the sights and things like that. So there are some people, I mean, people say that we're crazy for going through movies like this, but some people just, you know, will look at a gun in a movie and say, oh, I know what gun that is. I'm aware of that. So, you know, kudos to them for being able to do that. Now, I always think about
Gone in 60 Seconds with Robert Duvall playing the sounds of the engines. Mm-hmm. And listening to that, and go, I recognize what engine that is. And all the engines sound the same. They all sound the same.
That's right.
What are you talking about? Yeah. How do you know this? I don't get it at all. But I can pick up a screw and tell you what kind of screw it is by looking at it. So, I don't know. We're all different.
Okay. That's definitely true. Now, I mean, we'll talk about this more next week, but in court, when the DA holds up the gun, he holds up a completely different gun.
I didn't notice that.
He holds up a well, I didn't notice that until I looked it up on the Internet Movie Firearms Database.
I was trying to keep track of his tie, because his tie changes next week as well, I think. But that could be a different day, so that would be fine.
Right, exactly. But so there he has a cult police positive instead of a cult detective. So.
Well, then that's fine, because it's not supposed to be Andy's gun that he's got. So he couldn't find Andy's gun. Andy's gun's in the river.
True, but you know the only thing they know is that it's 38, and that's it, you know, from the bullets.
Right, but no, but they, yeah. Well, no, they know that.
They didn't have the gun itself, so.
But they don't. They only know that the victims were shot with the 38. We don't know that Andy's gun is a 38.
No, but do they know that? I'm trying to remember if the gun was registered under Andy's name. Maybe not.
It's not specified. It's talked about on Friday a little bit, so we'll talk about it on Friday.
Right. Okay. We'll wait till then.
It's my one note for Friday.
There you go. Okay. Your one note for Friday. Wow.
Okay. One of my two. One of two.
We know what we have to look forward to on Friday. We have to look forward to
it. It's less than these minutes. I'm used to 5 minutes at a time, Ralph.
That's right. We look forward to Silent J. Hey, Silent J and Bob. There you go. Okay. So Andy just starts swinging away, and you can see the pain on his face. And then the shot changes, and we're in court, and we get to hear the DA begin his questioning. And he goes, "Mr. Dufresne, describe the confrontation you had with your wife the night she was murdered." And you know, as Andy's getting ready to respond, we get a credit on screen of Mark Ralston. Are you familiar at all with Mark Ralston, who plays Boggs Diamond here?
He's one of those actors who, like, I know the face. I know I've seen things with him in, but I couldn't pinpoint what. I know the face, I know the name. But he doesn't stand out for me as much as the Jeffrey DeMunns and William Sadlers of the world.
Okay, so he has on IMDb 199 acting credits. He was in The Departed. He played Delahunt. Do you remember The Departed?
No, I remember The Departed, but I don't remember him. I remember him in
Okay.
Aliens.
No, so
Is one of the, yeah.
see, that's what I'm saying. So in The Departed, Delahunt is the guy who is another undercover agent that's there, that points out the fact that he gave him the wrong address.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so that's Delahunt, and you're right, he was also in Aliens. He played Private Drake.
I didn't realize he was in the Saw franchise. Like, I've seen pretty much all of the Saw movies, and I don't remember Eric's.
Is there anybody who hasn't been on the Saw franchise?
A lot of actors, I think, are above that kind of thing. Above is the wrong word, but
Yes, there are quite a lot of
in
actors
it,
there.
yeah.
He was in Saw 6. Let's see.
And five.
And 5, okay. So you see, they liked him there. They wanted to bring him back in order to kill him. why not?
Oh, he is apparently he's in one of my favorite films, Rob. He's in Daylight. I
Ah,
love
there
Daylight, but I don't remember him. I don't remember Chief Dennis Wilson in Daylight. But that is long been one of my favorite films.
you go.
I'll
Yes, we
keep an eye
know
out
that,
for him.
and Joe Tura loves when you mention it. So, hey, Joe.
There we go. Joe, you're welcome. Hey, Joe. I need to keep an eye out for him next time. And Dan Hedaya, also from Daylight, is one of those guys that I get mixed up with Jeffrey DeMunn sometimes. They have similar. The middle of their faces is similar, I find.
Okay, the middle of their faces are similar. That's a good way of describing someone. Understood.
That Jeffrey DeMunn's got a Dan Hedaya air to him.
Right. Okay.
That's not an insult. Dan Hedaya is great.
Okay. I can see that. And he also I know you're not a fan of this, but he was also in From the Earth to the Moon, and he played Gus Grissom.
I'm not a fan. I've just never seen it.
No, but you always say you don't like the space stuff, so
There's too much of it.
Okay.
I've seen enough.
Nah, I don't think you have.
Space isn't changing anytime soon.
True, but this is the history of it. But whatever, that it's neither here nor there. And hopefully one of these days Jim will actually do From the Earth to the Moon, segment by segment, like he really wants to. But we'll have to wait and see if he does it.
I think you might just have to do that for him.
It looks like that's the way it's going to be, but we'll see. We'll see. But then you won't be on, so that's a problem.
I'll
So,
be on. Well, listen, they'll be on.
no, okay. Well, what's the point then? So whatever. And then Andy begins to respond, and Tim Robbins does a great job here
So good. He's so
of
good.
giving us such a stuck-up look while he's, he has like an air about him. With the way that he's that he's responding to everything. And he goes, "It was very bitter. She said she was glad I knew, that she hated all the sneaking around, and she said she wanted a divorce in Reno." So do you have any idea why it's considered easy to get a divorce in Reno? I mean, we hear this often in pop culture, in movies, and I isn't Wasn't it in the song "Walk the Line" he talks about it, or "Folsom Prison"? No, I think it's
Yeah,
in "Folsom
shot a man
Prison."
in Reno
That's right.
just to watch him die.
That's right. So, do you have any idea why Reno is considered this place where people go to get quickie divorces?
Well, you get married in Vegas and then divorced in Reno, I think was the thing. Is that the thing? Yeah. That's about as much as I could guess.
Okay, so apparently the Reno is one of the few places that changed in the 1930s their residency requirement in order for being able to get divorced. So you can't just go anywhere and get divorced. It's not like Vegas where anyone can go and get married. To get divorced, you have to live in that particular jurisdiction for a certain amount of time. And in the 1930s, for some strange reason, Nevada, when it was just starting with all the gambling and stuff like that, they decided that in Reno that they were going to boost their economy and make it that people only need to live there for 6 weeks before they needed to get divorced. So I mean, that's also pretty strange that basically what she's saying to Andy is, let's move to Reno for 6 weeks so that we can get divorced quickly.
They both need to move? I don't think they both need. It seems ridiculous to me that it's easier to get married than divorced. I feel like getting divorced should be a very simple, like a very straightforward process of just walk in somewhere and walk out divorced.
Right.
Okay. I think that's what's
I understand that. And you're right. It's only one spouse, not both. Only one of them needs to move there. So she should have already gone if that was the case, right?
There we go. Phone him from Reno. Hey, I live in Reno now. Sign a form in 5.5 weeks.
Yeah. Well, apparently you can also, if both sides agree, you can get divorced much quicker. I don't know how much quicker, but it's also Nevada is a no-fault state, which means that you don't need to, no one needs to prove any wrongdoing. You don't have to prove abuse or infidelity. Mrs. Dufresne.
Sure.
you just say we don't want to be married anymore, and or you say that we've been living apart for 180 days, which is 6 months. So yeah, it's a little a little strange, but basically around this time in the 1940s, thousands of people, including mostly women, who felt trapped in a marriage in eastern states, which wouldn't let them get divorced so easily, they moved to Reno. And Reno became known as the Reno Cure, where people were living in hotels or what they would call divorce ranches for 6 weeks before being able to get a rubber stamp decree that they can get divorced.
Divorce ranch is such a sad... Well, I guess, no, it's happy. They're getting out of the marriages they don't want to be in. That's fine.
Right.
Divorce ranch sounds appalling.
Yes, the terminology is a little strange. Yeah.
Back on up into the divorce stable.
Yeah. Yeah. A little, you're right. The way that it's phrased is a little strange, but it makes sense. I guess, and that helps the economy. And what a better way to help the economy than try to get all these women trying to get out of bad marriages to come in and put money into the economy of Reno.
Sure, I'm sure they spend a lot of time in the casinos.
Probably. Well, probably not, because again, these are women who are trying to possibly get out of bad marriages, so they probably don't have that much money, or maybe that's the reason why they would go to the casinos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That 6 weeks go do something.
Yeah, seriously. And then we get the on-screen credit of Jeffrey DeMunn.
Closely followed by the on-screen face of Jeffrey DeMunn.
Yes. Who is are you familiar with him from anything non Frank Darabont?
Yeah, again, he's one of those guys who's in a lot of stuff. He was in Burn After Reading. He's the Coen brothers love a character actor, just as Darabont does. But it's mainly Darabont stuff. So The Mist and Green Mile and Walking Dead.
And The Majestic.
He's in The West Wing. He's in ER. He's in, I think, an episode of Angel, probably. There's a lot of people. Those kind of shows that everyone's in.
Right. Have you ever seen the movie The Majestic?
I have seen The Majestic. I don't remember it very well. I know that's another Darabont. I've only seen it the once. I do have it on DVD. I should give it another go.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I really do enjoy it. And again, you get to see him. You get to see James Whitmore Jr. again. I like The Majestic. I think it's a great story.
I think I watched it and got this isn't as good as all of the other masterpieces Darabont's directed.
Yeah.
I'll watch it again.
It's not as good as some of the others, but it is a great, I guess, love letter to old Hollywood type of thing, and the love of movies and things like that. So, yeah. And at the same time that we have the Jeffrey DeMunn credit, we have a credit for Larry Brandenburg, who up until seeing this and doing my research for this, I had never even heard of him before. Never even saw him. You know, never even thought about him.
He's the guy with the glasses, isn't he? He's the guy in Red's Crew with the glasses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Skeet.
That's great. And he's also in Fargo. He plays Stan Grossman.
Sure, of course he does.
Do you know Stan Grossman is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I know Fargo. Fargo's great.
Yes.
He's the guy who vouches for Peter Stormare, but not...
No, not at all. Stan Grossman is the guy who's the... he's the right-hand man of Jerry's father-in-law.
Yes, sorry. There's a lot of names in that film.
Right. Yeah, they're all crazy names. So.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It's Shep. Shep is the guy who vouches for.
Oh, right. Shep.
Peter Stormare. Yeah.
Shep Proudfoot.
Shep Proudfoot. Stan Grossman. Yeah.
So Larry, up until now, I didn't even realize that it's the same actor, which is pretty impressive. Also, that he's able to blend in and look so different, you know, between them.
Yeah, that could be a bane on his career, that he's such a chameleon.
Maybe. That's true. He was also in Field of Dreams. Who the hell did he play in Field of Dreams?
he's in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. A lot of great films, this guy.
Yeah.
Untouchables.
Field of Dreams, he plays a heckler. Okay. All right. At the PTA. I remember that scene, but I don't remember him in it. I thought it was a woman who was heckling there more. But so yeah, we get the credits of both of them, and then the DA goes, "And what was your response?" And Andy goes, "I told her I would not grant one." Now
I'll see you in hell before I see you in Reno.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But
great line.
It makes you wonder why, like, I've always had a problem with the idea that why would Andy say that he won't give her a divorce? Like, what is, you know, he's in a loveless marriage. He knows his wife is cheating on him. Why does he want to still be with her? You know,
my only guess would be maybe she doesn't work. And if they were to get divorced, then she would take half of his money, potentially. He seems, because he works in a bank, he seems a fairly financially minded guy in this stage of his life, so maybe he wants to retain his earnings, would be just my stereotypical guess of divorces from the time.
Okay, could be. Maybe could it be from a religious perspective? Maybe he's a Catholic and they refuse to get divorced. I don't know.
Could be, yeah.
The DA goes, "I'll see you in hell before I see you in Reno." Those are the words you use, Mr. Dufresne, according to your neighbors. And then Andy goes, "Well, if they say so, I don't really remember. I was very excited." I'm like, what the hell type of response is that? You know, you'd think that Andy would be a little more calculating at this point. While he's, you know, you don't agree to saying something like that if you don't think you said it.
This is what I like about Andy. This is such a great, odd way to introduce the hero of your story, the lead. He's setting him off in such a unlikable place. Like, everyone describes him as being cold and bitter and chills my blood just to look at you.
That's right.
A line I was hoping to get this week, but it's just outside of my remit.
Yeah, that'll be next week.
Yeah, but just... It's setting off in this such an unlikable place, but he's the guy we're going to follow and watch and root for this whole time.
Yeah.
So I think where Andy's coming from at this point is he is telling the truth. He has faith in the system. He's been a rule follower. We find later on he comes as being like straight as a die, straight as an arrow, like outside of prison. So he's like, I'm going to go into court. I'll tell the truth. I know what, I didn't kill her. I'm a victim here, and it doesn't work. But he's like, he's telling the truth. If you tell the truth, you have fewer things to remember, is the saying. So he's going to come to court. For all we know, he's representing himself. We never see his defendant. So yeah, he's like, I don't know. He has faith in the system, but he's not good at being in court, I guess. But I actually want to get your opinion, Rob. When do you remember the first time you watched this? Did you think he was guilty, or had you read the
Well,
book first?
I had read the book, so
Okay, when you read the book for the first time, did you think he was guilty? Okay.
I don't remember, but the odds are I
Did
probably did.
I think I can't remember if it was because I watched this in school when I was young, so I don't know exactly if I thought he was innocent, but I think I thought he was innocent just because he was the lead of a film. And surely the lead of the film wouldn't be somebody who had killed his wife.
No, of course not.
But I think they do a good job of if you're just like arriving at this film with like making him believably be a murderer.
Correct.
So it's you know we don't see him get sentenced this week. That's next week. But you fully understand why everybody is against this guy
Yeah,
because he's
because
just not likable at all.
no, not at all. And then we get two more credits on screen for Brian Libby and Neil Giantoli. Giantoli, right. So Brian Libby was an actor. He passed away a few years ago in 2021, but he was in every Frank Darabont movie up until his death. So he had a part in The
Sure.
Mist. He was in Shawshank. He was in The Green Mile. He was in Majestic. Obviously, he's in this movie. He plays Floyd, who's one of the one of the cons.
I do believe you're talking out your ass, Floyd. Yeah.
It's interesting though that he was never in The Walking Dead. They, if they had,
Well, same as William Sadler. Yeah.
no, if they had such a good, repertoire between them.
Sure. I mean, you get actors that don't want to do TV, or don't want to because there's you know that was roughly the time when TV wasn't quite seen as
Right.
prestigious as it is has been since.
Right. Okay. Makes sense.
But I
And
mean, saying that Neil Giantoli was has been in a bunch of TV, so.
right. Well, Neil Gintoni, he plays Jigger, and he's also famously from in Memphis Belle. He played Jack Bocci, who I'm sure friend of the show Chris is already in contact with him. To get him to be on his show when he eventually does Memphis Belle Minute. Sorry if I let that out of the bag, Chris. But I'm trying to get you to do it. Trying to get you to do it. But he told me he knows every well, he knows all of the actors, and he's been in touch with every one of them. And so far, half of them have agreed to be on. So that'll be very interesting to watch him do that. He has 48 acting credits, but hasn't had any acting credits for 20 years.
Yeah, sure. Now he's appeared alongside Jack Black in Waterworld. They're both part of Dennis Hopper's crew.
Yes, he is a hellfire gunner.
But
Hellfire gunner.
yeah, Jack Black was a pilot.
Okay. Fair enough. And then the DA says to Andy, "Well, what happened after you argued with your wife?" And he responded, he goes, "She packed a bag." And he goes, "She packed a bag to go and stay with Mr. Quentin."
And
So
Quentin.
that's right. Now, I just always the name Quentin has always interested me. Do you know the origin or the meaning of Quentin?
I find it an interesting choice because it's another prison,
That
San
I thought
Quentin,
so, yeah.
which I know just from Johnny Cash. But no, I don't know the origin of Quentin.
So it's comes from the Roman word quintus, meaning five.
Sure.
The Latin word quintus, meaning five. And in Roman, it was in Rome, it was very common to name children based on numbers, based on, you know, the order or the month they were born and things like that. So they named sure. Quintus. So I guess, or Quintinus, which could be someone who was born
the fifth, in the fifth child.
Or the fifth child, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, we all know that Quentin Tarantino is probably the most famous Quentin besides San Quentin.
You know, besides, yes. Yeah, I can't think of a more famous one.
Right. Yeah, neither can I.
Yeah.
And as they're telling us this, we see the door open up in a room, and we see a couple come into the room and basically start undressing one another. And the DA then says, Glenn Quentin, golf pro. At the Snowden Hills Country Club, the man you, and then he gets cut off as we get to see on the screen another two credits, one for David Provol and one for Joseph Ragino. So David Provol, most people know from The Sopranos.
Sure.
Again, these are two more of the group of cons. David Provol plays Snooze. It's so interesting the names that these characters have. Yeah. And Joseph Rango plays Ernie, who's again one of the other cons. He also played
cells. They're just in the cells.
Yeah, he's also he was in a Seinfeld episode with the dry cleaner.
He's also in Daylight.
There he is. He's the dispatcher. Once again, dispatcher, see, yeah. Hey Joe, you get two more. You get another one in this episode. So yeah, those are the, yeah,
David Provol is one of those guys where like I see his face and think, oh, I've seen this guy in a million things, and I've seen him in like a couple of things. He just has one of those faces. But he's in Mean Streets back in the day. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now, do you believe that Snowden Hills Country Club, is that a real place or not?
No, it's not. I looked it up. Okay. I was confused because like Snowden's in Wales. And so I thought, oh, that's odd. They would call it Snowden. But then there's a bunch of places in America that are named after places in the UK. And I looked it up and like, this just isn't one. This is the one they made up.
Well, they made it up.
Why would they do that?
They made it up, but there really is a snow. I know it's called Snow Hill, not Snowden Hill. Right. So yeah, Snowden Hill Country Club is completely made up, and that's you know where Glenn Quentin was working.
And there's Mount Snowden is the biggest mountain, the tallest mountain in Wales.
Okay.
I have been up it. It is when we went up it, it was very misty. We couldn't see a damn thing, but it was a nice climb. It's in Snowdonia.
Okay.
Lovely place.
That works. And you know, as we're hearing this, you know, we see the couple continuing to undress each other, you know, and then that's how this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to add about this minute, Jay?
No, I think we covered it all. I many would talk about how great Tim Robbins is in this scene, and he is great. Yeah. I think we've done that.
Mm-hmm. Yes we did. All right, so today's segment is Midweek Morgan, where my guests will give their top five Morgan Freeman performances.
Okay. I'll throw out some honorable mentions first. I really like him in Hard Rain, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Gone Baby Gone, and Deep Impact are four of my shout-out films. Number five, it's rare to see him play a bad guy, and I don't think it's a great film, but I enjoyed his performance in Wanted. I like it was odd to see Morgan Freeman swearing, like angrily. Okay. That was jarring, but I liked it. And he's played the president. He's played official characters. I loved it when he played God. Bruce Almighty is my number four. Again, not an incredible film. But I think he, if you're going to cast somebody as God, he's like not a bad choice. I think he fits the bill. And I liked him in that. I'm putting Shawshank number three. Excellent performance for Morgan Freeman. I like how they age him across the film, and he looks like he genuinely is a man getting older. Like if you had told me they shot this over 20 years, then I would be like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. The effects are that good aging wise and just performance wise. Number two, a very different performance in the Lego Movie. One of my favorite films.
You? Lego Movie?
Yeah, I know. Shocking. I had to be on there somewhere. Again, just he brings a lot more energy to that role than I thought a man of his age would at that time. It's quite he's playing like a Gandalf kind of character, but a lot weirder. Number one, another one of my favorites, Seven. I love Seven. Seven's just a perfect film. And he is Somerset. He has a lot of great scenes, a lot of great dialogue, a lot of great stillness. Just the old detective one last job kind of thing. And it's the worst one last job you could imagine.
Fantastic.
So yeah, that's my Seven. I've always liked Morgan Freeman. I've always been a great actor. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, but that's my top five. That's the ones I like the best.
Okay, very nice.
And yes, he's good in the Dark Knight films, but whatever. He's barely in them.
He's barely in them. I don't know if you want to say that, but
He's, I mean, he's good in them, but he's not like the main character. He's not running the
okay.
show.
Is he the main character in the Lego movie?
Not like in the Lego movie.
That's right. I knew that's where you were going to go. All right. So now we will play the daily game of Name That Movie Adaptation. Let's spin the wheel and see what Jay gets. Pounding around and around the wheel, yo. Okay, this is a film from 1999, and the original title of the book was Eaters of the Dead.
The dead.
And I'm going to give you a
Ooh.
hint. You mentioned this either yesterday or the day before, that this, I think actually it was on Monday, that this is going to be the one of the movies that I could possibly do next season.
Deep Blue Sea. You could do next. Is Green Mile? No. There's a lot of films in 99. God, I can't remember, Rob. Eaters. Can I have another clue, please?
Oh, come on. What
Are you doing clues for this? No?
season is next season going to be? What's the number?
Oh, so 13. So what's the 13th Warrior?
Yes.
Was
Yes.
that? Okay, I haven't actually seen the 13th Warrior. So, okay,
I
good.
actually saw it and hated it, but that's fine. You're supposed to hate those type of John McTiernan movies.
Okay. That's why he made
Of
them
course.
be
Of
hated.
course. Well, because he was too busy tapping other people's phones at the time, instead of.
Sure.
Or tapping his ex, was his ex-wife's phone? I don't know, something like that. Okay, so now we will play once again the other daily game of High Low, where we're gonna see if Kay can try and guess what the IMDb score and the Rotten Tomato score is of three different movies. So, round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, the 1959 movie Anatomy of a Murder, which I actually just rewatched a few weeks ago.
I have never seen it. It's been on my list to watch for a while now. So IMDb, I reckon it'll be quite high for Anatomy of Murder. I'll go with 8.6.
It's an 8.
Okay.
Okay. And.
And Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know. Rotten Tomatoes, I'll go with 93.
96, which I mean, it's a great movie, and the idea that I mean, again, I haven't looked at whether the reviews are contemporary reviews or they're recent reviews, but the bottom line is that Anatomy of the Murder was a very controversial movie at the time. So if those reviews are actually from the time, that's even more amazing that people embraced it, I guess you can say.
Sure.
All right, let's spin the wheel again. The 1951 movie A Place in the Sun.
I am not familiar with the place in the sun. So
You want more information about the movie itself?
sure, what have you got?
Okay, so it's a movie starring Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor, and it's about a boy that goes to work at his rich uncle's ranch and falls in love with two different women. One of them being Elizabeth Taylor, the other one being Shelley Winter, who's directed by George Stevens.
Okay, I don't know why I asked for more information. I'm not sure what help I was hoping to get.
Well, now you know what the movie is.
8.1.
7.7.
Okay. And for Rotten Tomatoes, older film, so 95.
76.
Okay.
76.
Right.
All right, so let's do the wheel for your third one today. Okay, the 1963 film Lilies of the Field.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that either. So,
you know what it is? It's with Sidney Poitier. That's the movie that he won an Oscar for.
I did not know that. I'll just go with 7.8 again.
7.5.
Okay. And then for Rotten Tomatoes, higher than the last one. So 85.
92.
92. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Okay. Excellent. So, Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jay Cluett?
Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is my podcast with Mark Hoffmeyer, where we talk about Deep Blue Sea and films similar to Deep Blue Sea. You can find everywhere you can find podcasts and all over social media at Deep Blue Sea Pod.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.